Cloudcast Media presents from the massive studios in Raleigh, North Carolina. This is The Cloudcast with Aaron Delp and Brian Gracely, bringing you the best of cloud computing from around the world.
Good morning, good evening, wherever you are, and welcome back to The Cloudcast. We're coming to you live from our massive Cloudcast studios here in Raleigh, North Carolina. A quick intro this week. As we hit record on this, Google Cloud is having its conference this week, and we're seeing lots of good announcements coming out of the show. Look for a recap very soon. Today's show is a bit outside of our usual, but we hope you'll find it really educational. We dig deep into a specific industry, media and streaming. We cover everything from CDNs, partnering with AWS, and even digging a bit into AI, AR, and VR. As well. I certainly learned a lot, and I hope you do as well. And that is coming up right now.
And we're back. And Aaron, how are you today, man? How you been?
Not too bad, not too bad. How about yourself?
I've been good. I've been traveling a little bit, but good to be back and glad to be, we've got good sunshine these days. The sun stays up longer. We're starting to feel a little better around the pollen and all, so things are good. But it is a time when a lot of folks are, as good as the weather is outside, sometimes with all the stuff going on with like March Madness and new movies coming out and all sorts of stuff, people are in their homes more. They are streaming more stuff on TV. They're streaming more stuff on movies. They're mobile. You know, they're doing all sorts of stuff. And we've never really covered kind of how all that magic happens, right? We're just so used to nowadays, you know, you pull up an app on your phone, you've got an infinite library of movies and interesting things to watch. But yet there are companies that are building this and making it super simple for us. And we thought, you know, let's expand beyond just the basic cloud stuff that we talk about. Let's dive into some of these more unique applications that that are so widely used. And I think we're going to dive into that today.
Yep, absolutely. And so what we did is, of course, let's go find somebody who can talk about this. And Brad not only can talk about it, he went and founded a company around it. So first of all, we have Brad Winnett, president and co-founder at Trackit. How are you doing, Brad?
I'm doing great, Aaron. Brian, thanks a lot for having me. I think we've got a lot to discuss.
Absolutely. Yeah. So Brad, first of all, let's kind of jump right into all of this. Like Brian was kind of saying, like, media as a whole, like, not only is everyone streaming and it tends to be a little seasonal at times, but it's kind of also undergone some major changes as an industry over the years, right? And we're going to talk about that evolution a little bit. But most of us only see that front end of watching video. Like, maybe it was on the TV and we're all cord cutters now, or we're all mobile now. And so what made you kind of way back in the day say, hey, this is something I want to jump into this market and get into this technology specifically?
Well, you kind of hit on it. There's been really a sea change in how content is presented to end users that's happened over the course of, you know, a decade or so, or since really kind of since Netflix started, maybe a little bit beforehand. And part of it was built on sort of the first linchpin of being able to deliver content over internet networks, right, over IP. And that was when content delivery networks started to come about, because people found they couldn't get decent video otherwise. So, you know, early on, the first piece was, okay, hey, we have a way we can deliver stuff to an end user over, you know, my old computer that I had sitting there. Now, early on, it's like, you know, it's amazing, you know, blew your mind. But what's happened since then is that the rest of the media supply chain that feeds the machine has changed. And actually, even on the back end, used to be, hey, I get Netflix this way, but now I'm getting like live sports on my TV that's being streamed in a very similar fashion. You don't know it as a TV watcher, but it's totally transformed the professional, the broadcasters as well, and continues to do so. So a lot of changes. And when that was starting to happen, old school broadcasters, studios, post-production companies, you know, these are old on-prem guys used to their computers by their desk or their fancy custom-made video switchers or whatever, analog switchers. How do they transition to this new world where I can, one, do things digitally and now do things digitally in the cloud? and it takes a different skill set. And there was a need there, and that's why we founded Track.
Yeah. You know, I think for a lot of us that don't live in this world all the time, if we were to just sort of think about some of the economics around this, obviously sports is huge business because it's live, and there's an element of wanting to be, you know, part of it and participate and so forth. And then, you know, you have all of the, you know, kind of known streaming services, you know, the Disneys and the Hulus and the Netflix and others, where content tends to be king, right? You know, he who has the most to show, he who has the, you know, the most popular thing. But what are some of the other economics between sort of live sports and owning the biggest content library that, you know, people might have to think about, whether they're deciding, you know, which service should I work with, or if we want to build our own, like what are some of the nuances? Well, you know, help us with a little broader perspective on what are the economics around the new streaming world.
Yeah. And it's really, that's a maybe not a small portion, but just a portion of the overall pie. You haven't touched on things like Twitch and TikTok,
yep.
YouTube. There is, you know, just this whole other range of content providers that are using similar infrastructure to deliver the same, you know, technical sort of content, you know, streaming video, audio, gaming, where people are now, you know, there's a lot of live streaming of computer gaming out there that's really growing like crazy. These are all different areas that are contributing to the overall picture. And as far as making money and monetization, there's a lot of ways to do it. And I think we're really at the very beginning of it, of people really understanding how to do it and the best ways to do it. And I think because of that, we're getting just a plethora of new providers and services and people being able to do different parts of the puzzle, or maybe sometimes as much of the whole puzzle as you can for a certain segment of users. I think over time, like anything else, I think there's going to be some sort of consolidation. You're already kind of starting to see it in the major streamers, right? Where you're probably you're seeing Hulu and Disney Plus going to consolidate, and probably Paramount Plus and Peacock, and you know, who all these guys are going to consolidate a little bit. And you'll probably see a weaning out of the various other providers who are more like SaaS providers, where you know, they're providing streaming or video distribution as a service. You know, and that goes all the way from YouTube down to, you know, Vimeo and Agora and all the rest of the potential providers there. There'll be a rationalization of the space over time. And how people make money out of it, there's going to be a bunch of ways, at least for the foreseeable future. You know, the interesting thing now, I'm sure you heard about free ad-supported TV, FAST channels, as you know, coming back. Turns out that ads interspersed in your media stream is a pretty good way to make money.
Yeah.
so, you know, there's some people, like, you know, I'm sure Netflix is profitable. It could be very profitable with their, you know, all in one sort of service model, but you're going to see a real mixture over time.
Yeah. And Brad, let's talk about those platforms for a second too, because what, like you mentioned earlier, like, hey, in the early days you had, like, I would say Twitch really, led in the live area, and Netflix, I think, was the early king in streaming, right? But then I think one of the early advantages was it was just a really good platform and a really good experience. And, you know, some of the other ones, like I'll pick on HBO Max because I was a long-term. You know, HBO Max versus Netflix back in the day, it was a no-brainer. I mean, HBO Max was horrible, right? But now you don't see that anymore. Like, everything's kind of everywhere. Everything's on every device. And whether it's through like CDNs or other technologies, like, we've solved a lot of the platform things, or at least from a consumer side we have, right? And so tell everyone a little bit about what it means to really have a good platform, right? Like, how should people think about those media platforms and what goes into it? And are we past the days of build your own, or are we still building your own? What's your thoughts there?
No, most definitely not. I think there's two general classes of service architectures, and it basically comes down to build your own or buy. And I think for, you know, from the prosumer up to the low end, you know, professional provider, going out and buying is probably, if not a great place to start, at least where you should go first. Because there is quite a hurdle to get over the point where I have enough critical mass that I can go in and do custom things that will make me money or expand my reach or build my environment as a differentiator versus my competition. So at the higher end, it's definitely build your own. And that all comes down to what I can do about recommendation engines, monetization engines behind the covers that the end user never sees any of this stuff, right? Scheduling, you know, heavy analytics about when I should introduce something, how long I should keep it for, what do I pay my provider, you know, the content provider. So, you know, Netflix has thousands of people just working on the platform. You don't see it every day. You're not seeing 1,000 new software features every day, but trust me, they're there under the covers. And the same thing is true of all the major streamers. Once you get to a certain critical mass, you're going to want to build your own because you're going to want to do things that, frankly, you're just not going to get out of the all package SaaS providers. And it's not even just the front end. It's how you tie it into the back end providers. For example, a big business of ours are content providers who are localizing their content to send to different countries with different standards and practices. I mean, this country, I can have nudity and swearing, but not violence. In that country, it's just the opposite. So the ability to take all that, package it, consume it, which are also video processes, right? Maybe I got to do some editorial. I got to do retranscode. In other words, building it for different delivery platforms and then sending it to the right place so I don't get a fine somewhere. All those things have to be built in, and you're just not going to get those out of the generic SaaS platform. So there's still lots of room for custom builds.
Yeah. Are we seeing, sort of an analogy that jumps to mind, and I don't know if this works at all. I mean, at some point I would think that some of the companies become so proficient at streaming. Let's say you're ESPN and you're like, look, cord cutting is going to be, that's the future, at least for a chunk of it. I've got to get really good at this. But then do you see them not only delivering their own services, but then also because they're so good at it, they offer kind of white label capabilities the same way that Visa will do processing for MasterCard or things along those lines? Or are you still seeing people who are like, my use case is so unique and we think we're going to get so big that I'm going to go build this on my own. I don't necessarily want to take advantage of some prior art expertise or something. Where are we in terms of, if you wanted to get started today and you thought you had, a business to drive this, or you had a thing, where do you leverage the cloud providers? Where do you leverage somebody doing white labeling that already did? How does that sort of mindset work?
Yeah, that's an interesting one. For example, Major League Baseball, maybe 4 or 5 years ago, built a really robust streaming platform. and they did have third parties using their stream platform. And then they got bought by one of the major studios. I forgot who.
Oh, right. BAM. Was it BAM Studios or BAM?
Yeah, BAM. Right. So that's exactly kind of what you're describing, right? Hey, we built this great platform to do things. Other people can then go and use it. Problem is, some of those other providers then got the rug swept out from underneath them when they got bought, and now
right
in the lurch a little bit. So you got to be a little careful. That said, I think the people that I mentioned earlier who have these streaming SaaS services, they're going to try and climb their way up the food chain. There's no doubt. They'll add more functionality to the environment. But it's a moving market. So if you're in a mid-market, I think that's a great place to start to immediately get your video out there and at least start the path to making some money doing it. I think over time, if they grow, if you get to X million number of subscribers, you're going to find out there's things you can't do with any of those. And that's where you move to the custom builds. Now, the good thing about custom builds, though, it's not all that custom anymore to get video just out there. So, you go to, we're an AWS partner, Amazon Web Services.
Yep.
They have every Lego block you can conceive of almost to try and put these things together without having to go in and, write code necessarily. And, you know, our job is to take these Lego blocks and put them together for those clients. And it's a really nice mid-level kind of way where you're not building from complete scratch. You have all the Legos you're putting together, which is a lot easier than writing, you know, source code. So that we see, and that's a growing business. You know, for AWS, it's certainly a growing business, the media and entertainment sector. And new things are coming in, too, adding a lot of capabilities there. For example, you mentioned ESPN and live streaming. So live streaming is a different process than video on demand. You know, the ultimate delivery is sort of similar, but upfront everything is different. And there's very different requirements from an ESPN versus a local news, you know, one of the local news channels, for example, that's broadcasting a small market soccer team or something.
Right.
So that part of it is distinct from VOD from all except for the last mile, I think.
Yeah, that makes sense. And Brad, let me ask you this, because I was going to ask you specifically about being an AWS partner in the AWS services, but you kind of talked about all those Lego blocks. And I was wondering exactly that, because the AWS services, I mean, it's in the hundreds these days. I mean, it almost gets overwhelming. And is that where you, as an AWS partner, the consulting and trusted advisor portion of being an AWS partner comes into play? Like, give everyone an overview of like the landscape of what it means to be an AWS partner these days, because that has changed a bit over the years, and we've talked to AWS partners in the past. And so, you know, is it mainly for you like professional services and consulting, or, you know, tell everyone a little bit about that?
Yeah. So yeah, the AWS partner environment is a vast landscape of ISVs, software developers, systems integrators, and everything in between. So, you know, for us, our approach is we're very focused on media workflows. And, you know, we want to be the partner if you have a media workflow, and regardless whether that's a media workflow in Disney or Paramount or Warner Brothers or a post-production house, or whether you're a large enterprise that has a lot of media in-house and needs to build media pipelines. And maybe that's, hey, I'm doing a lot of marketing, internal marketing stuff, or a lot of internal training videos. How do I publish these? How do I get them out? How do I manage them? How do I massage them, like transcode package? Or make sure that my people are actually watching them. So that's what we want to be. And AWS, you cannot be, I don't care how big you are, you can't be an expert on everything. You know, maybe if you're, you know, one of the huge, huge, huge consultants where they got thousands of consultants, those guys, you know, tend to cover a lot of AWS vertical markets and horizontal technology segments. But even so, it's hard to be a real specialist. You can't be a real specialist in everything. And we've chosen to be a specialist where there's media workflows involved. And we really concentrate on the AWS services and things that we find in those environments.
Yeah. What are, you know, for anybody who's, you know, interested in this space, or as you're talking about, you know, trying to help optimize workflows, like, what are some of the really critical technologies that, you know, can make a difference or really differentiate some of the streaming services? You know, whether it's, you know, leveraging an AWS service or something in open source, like what are the things that people are looking at to kind of get a step up on the competition?
Yeah, that's a good question. So let me do it in reverse. So there's the stuff that is less differentiated. And at this point, you know, the CDN part of it is a little less differentiated just because it's much more of a mature market. So you can get the job done with AWS CloudFront, or you can get the job done with Akamai or one of the other ones, and in a reasonable way. So there it's more a question of, okay, you know, what's the best cost that I can negotiate? And is there some feature here or there that I want to tweak that maybe is easier to do here versus there? Or the third part is, okay, are there other pieces in the puzzle that it makes sense for me to use something like Amazon CloudFront, because now it can be a part of my longer tail pipeline? which leads to the parts that are harder or still emerging in distributing and managing and delivering media content. So those pieces, you really have to look, it's called a media supply chain is the industry term for it. And it begins at the very beginning where you have a camera. And now do we do it the old way where we, you know, we're recording on site or I have a disk drive on site. I'll be using tapes anymore. And then what do I do with that disk drive? Or am I implementing what's really sort of cutting edge in the world today, which is camera to cloud? So how do I capture all the interesting stuff that's happening right at the camera? So all the interesting metadata, you know, I'm filming George Clooney. He's in Italy at the moment and it's daylight and he's on a lake. And here's a time code associated with all that stuff. I capture that. I have the raw content. I push it up into the cloud. Now what I do with it? Okay, so now what do I do with it? So I have all this metadata information that hopefully we've carried. This is one of the really hard parts of the creation media cycle. I have all this metadata. How do I do something with it? Okay, now I have to do some editing. You might do some editing on this podcast. Who knows? You might have to do some editing about it. How do I go to the right spot, do the right transitions, massage it the way it makes for a compelling story? And once I do that, now there's the other parts of the pipeline. How do I get this ready for finishing? So making sure the colors match and making sure that the audio is synced and all these other little bits and pieces to it. And then the next part is, okay, now maybe I can send, like I mentioned before, I can send this version to Netflix in Austria, and I send this version to whatever other, you know, to Pluto that's going to Hungary or Turkey or wherever it might be going to. And now that I've done that, package it. Okay, I'm going to be delivering it on a 4K screen, on an HD screen. I'm going to be delivering it on an iPhone. I'm going to be delivering it on an iPad or an Android. How do I create all these versions, package it, protect it for security reasons, and finally send it off to the CDN? So these other parts in the middle, these are things that people have been trying to figure out by themselves. And the key to making it cost effective is to figure out, especially if it's in the cloud, how to build it without having to move a lot of content around, make sure your artists and creatives can get access to it where the stuff is. So that's kind of a long-winded answer. I don't know if I answered the question actually, but it's these other parts of it that are the tougher ones that the end user never sees. Most don't know about.
Sure. Maybe I'll kind of finish up with one last question then. And this is more, I feel like on our podcast, it's almost like the standard last question now. And that is, how does artificial intelligence change all of this, especially when you're talking about metadata and, you know, lots and lots of data and lots of analysis, right? Is that something that potentially enhances or impacts everything we're talking about?
It does. It does. And it's not like, you know, artificial intelligence is kind of a big term. So we've been using what's more aptly described as computer vision, you know, for a long time now. And it's especially useful for, you know, grabbing interesting information out of your content. So, you know, oh, there's somebody smoking, there's nudity, there's a swear word, you know, all these other things that you want to know about, and really helps for the localization part of it. We actually have a product on the marketplace that's kind of packaged to be able to do that, to quickly go for your video and mark off the things that maybe an editor should look at if you're going to send it to Singapore, where really, you know, G is almost too much for a lot of Singapore. And then there's a lot of other tools, and you alluded to it before, a lot of open source things that are out there, not only in the AI world, but for example, we have an open source tool called TrackFlix that lets you really quickly sort of build your own environment, and it's open source, or you can help us to come in and customize it for you. Now, layered on top of those kind of both for pay and open source packages, all the new capabilities that Gen AI brings, you know, versus computer vision, it's a world of possibilities in the media space, and that can start at the very beginning. But you can imagine a writer. So after you write a story, the next thing you typically do is storyboard it out. You know, storyboard is like a comic book that lets you kind of run through how the content is going to play. There's Gen AI tools to take what you wrote in a script and build storyboards out for it. So rather than have to, you know, draw the stuff by hand, you can start creating that in a much faster fashion. And then that's just the first step. Then the second step is, okay, how do we take this out, parse out the content we have and provide it to the director, the producers, the actors, to be able then to go in and act on what we've written. Follow on with the next part, which is really the more sensitive piece to it, is you know, artificial actors, special effects created by AI, other areas that are, you know, much more sensitive in the media space. But we're definitely going to see them in other areas sooner. You're already seeing them in gaming, for example. You know, role play RPGs and other things in games created by AI. There's no union that's going to you know, keep that from happening. It already is. So there's going to be a very large effect throughout the chain with AI. And then certainly on the back end for things like monetization, advertising, customization for particular users, to be able to do that in a way that's, you know, good enough that it can make you money.
Yeah. Yeah. Hey, I want to ask you one last thing now, and I just jumped to my mind. How much does some of the new things around virtual reality, whether it's what Meta's doing with glasses and goggles, what Apple's doing, like how much will that intersect with the streaming world in terms of, you know, is it going to be similar types of back end systems to make this work? Is there a whole nother, you know, set of problems that this creates?
So there are some problems, and the biggest problems is just the speed of light and interactivity. So latency to your interactive environment. It's already a problem in games, right? So, you know, whoever's got the fastest or the lowest latency internet connection and the fastest computer monitor, you know, has an edge up on the games. In things like AR and VR, maybe not so much VR, but definitely in AR, it's even a bigger consideration. You know, and I'm not a huge believer personally in VR from an entertainment standpoint, but AR in particularly from an industrial standpoint, I think is going to be a huge one. You know, you're wearing your glasses and you're fixing an engine, or you're doing a surgery, you're performing surgery in real time where you can see the subject, you have an overlay, you're working on it. So there's a whole different set of technologies that are going to become available that helps enable and enhance those. But there's challenges, and some of the biggest challenges are the speed of light and how fast your AI, for example, is going to say, "Oh no, don't cut there! You're going to kill the patient," versus when he's actually doing it. So you know, it's going to, you know, these things, I think over time will revolutionize things like medicine.
Yeah.
Drug discovery, other things, headsets in and of themselves, until they're the weight of these glasses and feel that good, I'm never going to sit and watch a movie, you know, with a big Apple headset. And if you've tried one on, they're amazing if you have them configured and set up right. So, you know, it needs to know the distance between your eyes and how you focus and what your eyes, it's a little bit of work, and they're heavy. So eventually, yes, I don't think we're there yet.
Okay.
We're a ways off.
Well, good. Well, there's a lot of fascinating stuff, you know, out there in the streaming space. I think, you know, it's like you said, there are so many, niches and nuances and different market requirements and so forth. It's important, you know, if you're getting into this space, given, you know, kind of, A, how expensive content can be, how expensive video processing can be, to have the right people to work with. If folks want to engage with your team around this, if they, you know, want to learn what's possible, they want to, you know, improve their environments, they've been using something, they want to customize it, what's the best way to engage with your team, or what's the typical way that people would engage with your team?
So obviously we love those bluebirds that fly in without us knowing about it. And you can always reach us at info@trackit.io. That'll get a hold of my partner and I, as well as the people in our marketing group. And we're always happy to have, you know, that first conversation, no strings attached, and we'll do a little bit of discovery and give you some suggestions. And if we can help, great. And if not, that's fine too. But that said, you know, Amazon, AWS brings a lot of work our ways where they know somebody needs some help or an accelerant to their business to try and get things going faster. We have access to all of the capabilities of AWS in terms of helping make some of those things happen. And there's things like real dollars and money attached to onboarding new workflows into AWS. So those are available as well. And we can help walk our potential clients through those options with them. And we're pretty low, you know, we're not high pressure guys. Happy to have a conversation, and if something comes out of it in terms of engagement, that's great. If not, hope your business does great anyway.
Yeah, fantastic, fantastic. Well, Aaron, why don't we wrap it up there? Thank you very much for the time today. We really, really appreciate it. Aaron, why don't you wrap it up? Take us home.
Yeah, absolutely. So, Brad, thank you very much for your time. And everyone out there, thank you very much for listening. Thank you for taking the time. If you enjoy the show, please tell a friend. Please leave us a review. And I'm going to wrap up for this week, and we will talk to everyone next week.
Thank you for listening to The Cloudcast. Please visit thecloudcast.net to find more shows, show notes, videos, and everything social media.